This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show. It's a food episode today, so this should be an absolute crowd pleaser. We have two nutritionally knowledgeable guests joining us today to talk about getting the most out of the calories that we eat. And we'll be calling out some foods by name all throughout the show, so maybe don't listen to this one on an empty stomach. Or do. It's up to you. Our key guide for this talk is our resident nutritional expert, Dr. Krista Austin. Krista is an exercise physiologist and nutritionalist who consulted with the U.S. Olympic Committee and the English Institute of Sport. She's a PhD in exercise physiology and sports nutrition, a master's degree in exercise physiology, and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Krista, how's it going today?
Pretty good. How are you, Harvey?
I'm good.
Ready to get this one going?
It's been, you know, I was telling you before we started hitting record, it's been too long since we had you on the show. And I was like, I got to get Dr. Austin on. People love her episodes. So also joining us for this conversation is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, how are you today?
I am doing really well. You know, just finished a good brick workout and took your advice and will not be doing this one on an empty stomach. So had a great lunch so that I wouldn't be having my stomach growl into the microphone as we recorded here today.
Yep, we all appreciate that. I'm sure we could have heard it picked up in that microphone. So I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set foodie conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Some folks have a natural green thumb and are great at gardening and growing produce of all sorts. And some folks are great at accidentally killing plants and never growing a viable morsel of food for themselves. Regardless of which camp you fall into, and I'm in the latter camp, by the way, if you could grow any natural food in your own yard so that you could walk outside, pick that food item, and enjoy the fruits of your labor, what food would you most want to be able to grow and enjoy? Coach Elizabeth, what are you picking here?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you clarified that, you know, this is the hypothetical that you don't actually have to grow it, because I would also fall into that second camp of people that seem to kill every plant that they have. We have a ton of plants in our house, but they're all fake. So I love having, you know, that fresh look and plants and flowers. But none of them are real because I can't seem to keep them alive. But if I could keep something alive, I would absolutely grow avocados. And honestly, this is more of like a financial thing than anything. Those suckers are expensive. I mean, I love avocados. And Andrew, I know you don't, but I do. And we buy some every single week. And oh my gosh, I think that just being able to grow avocados would not only be delicious, but it would probably save me a lot of money.
Yep, you're absolutely right about that. Dr. Austin, what food would you want to grow and be able to eat all on your own?
Oh, it for sure is strawberries. I mean, I love strawberries. They're also not the cheapest, but you know, kind of like you guys, I have to buy them at the grocery store because I'm just not home enough to keep a garden and fresh fruits and vegetables growing. So, you know, you kind of look at my schedule here recently, I've been gone for the last 3 weeks in essence, like here a day and a half. So you can only imagine if I tried to grow my own, what that might look like. Probably would die out is what I would imagine. So I think, you know, strawberries for sure though. I just have had so many good strawberries.
My choice here, growing up where I grew up, that there's a ton of orange trees and orange groves in the Central Florida area. And My grandparents, like just as retirees, when I was growing up as a kid, they had a ton of orange trees, some tangerine trees, some pineapple and banana trees. They just grew all sorts of citrus in their yard. And so I just have super fond memories of just growing up. And we go to my grandparents' house to swim and hang out and cook out. And my grandma would always have homemade orange juice, homemade Florida orange juice with the oranges picked fresh off the tree in the backyard. And there's just nothing like it. Just that freshness. And I'm sure she added way too much sugar. But my pick is oranges, just because I grew up loving them. I grew up having just homegrown ones in the house, and that the store-bought orange juice just isn't quite the same. So that would be my pick here. But guys, we're going to throw this question out to you as we always do. I know we have three great picks here. I know there's going to be probably some different options and opinions out there. So make sure you are a part of the I Am Trot Out Facebook group and go find the post the day this episode comes out asking you, if you were just had a green thumb like that and could grow your own food, what one food item would you want to grow and be able to enjoy straight from your own yard?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Ketones are nature's superfuel, and the Delta-G ketone ester created by Professor Kieran Clark at Oxford University is the world's first drink that delivers the exact ketone produced naturally in the body. When I talk to Trot Out athletes who are already using Delta-G drinks in their training and racing, they all rave about the spark of energy and mental clarity the ketones provide. Some athletes are taking Delta-G Performance on the side of their carbohydrate source. Others are mixing Delta-G Tactical in with their nutrition. Both ways are highly effective, so however you approach nutrition, there is a Delta-G drink that can mix seamlessly into your flow. The team at Delta-G even offer free 15-minute one-on-one consultations where you can learn the best way to supercharge your nutrition routine with Delta-G ketones. You can book a call quick and easy at DeltaGketones.com. So head to the website, DeltaGketones.com, to learn more about fueling with ketone esters and to book your free 15-minute consultation. When you place an order, use code TROTOUT20 to get 20% off your Super Fuel ketone drinks. We all need a certain amount of calories to fuel our day-to-day lives, and there are a tremendous amount of foods that we can consume to get those calories. But not all calories are created equal. I love a hot salted pretzel, and I love a hot brown sugared sweet potato. Both are carbs, but one is far more nutritious than the other. Here to help us get more nutrient-packed foods into our diet is Dr. Krista Austin and pro triathlete Elizabeth James. So, Krista, Elizabeth, there are two parts to this main set. I've got a few questions to rip through about nutrients and food. And when those are done and dusted, we'll move on to the tasty part. I've asked each of you to come prepared to share 6 nutrient-rich foods that you work into your diet on a steady basis. So we'll walk away today hearing a full dozen tangible examples of things we can target on that next grocery store run. So to kind of get our questions rolling today, Dr. Austin, what makes certain foods more nutrient rich than others?
Well, I guess you have to sit back and say, what do you mean by nutrient rich? Because no one food, and okay, this is kind of the tricky part about doing nutrition, right, is going to give you that, you know, I don't know, that end all be all. Right. And so typically the reason we have all these macros and macros with different levels of micronutrients is because we need a wide variety of them to actually create the nutrient-rich diet that we need. So typically, if we take a look at the foods, you know, the more natural they are, the more they come from the ground, in terms of fruits, vegetables, we're going to get more nutrients out of them. Okay. But at the end of the day, they just all have their own unique, contribution really to the diet. And so I don't really look at them as being more nutrient rich than others per se, because they all have calorie density. They all have something they bring to the table. But I say, how do you mix them when it really is food in its raw form and not something that we've bought processed from the store? And what you find is that in its raw form, all your foods are really bringing something to the table. I think we get caught up a little bit when we do our analysis on what we eat in terms of the processed foods that we're eating. And that's where the nutrients typically are missing. So I think you have to look at it and say, okay, look, everything is bringing something to the table, whether it's oatmeal or a kiwi or salmon. It's just, do I have the right balance? Because they're not all going to bring something that's, you know, equivocal, to be honest. And they all have different levels of calories. But we need vitamin K. We need omega-3s. We need fiber. So we have to mix and match appropriately. And then you get the nutrient-rich diet that you're supposed to have.
Dr. Austin, I've heard it said before that you should have a color, you should strive to have a colorful plate, because, you know, a lot of times the foods that have color, you know, carrots that are orange and kale that is green and bananas that are yellow, a lot of times, like, if you have a plate that is just one color, you're not getting variety. Is there any truth to that, or is that kind of a myth?
No, that's absolutely true. So if you can color your plate, and enjoy doing it with things that are not processed, by the way, then you're going to have a nutrient-packed diet. It's just making sure that the process aspect isn't there, because it actually oftentimes takes things out of it. So I think you just got to keep in mind that the more processed it is, the less nutrients you may be receiving, more than likely.
Dr. Austin, when you work with an athlete and you're looking at the foods they're consuming regularly in their diet, what are you looking for, just from a nutrient perspective?
How much nutrients, in terms of the micros and the appropriate type of macros, are they getting from the actual calories they're consuming? So some people will consume the calories they need, but the actual nutrients in it are relatively low, mainly because they're not accounting for the fact maybe that they're having soy milk versus dairy, and they then need to, you know, have oatmeal with that soy milk and incorporate, you know, a little bit more protein powder or something to give them the micronutrient availability of an actual dairy product. If we're not able to meet the recommended daily allowance for a micro or macronutrient, or even really 150% of that, because athletes do need more because they train, then we start to delve into, you know, if not, why not? And how are we going to work to fulfill those needs? One of the ways to do this is through just manipulating the grams of carbohydrate, fat, and protein initially, just because typically the quality of those sources are the reason why an athlete maybe is not doing as well as they thought. So the question is, where do you obtain the macros from, and what can we start to kind of play a little bit of a substitute game with? So that's where, with a lot of athletes, they say, oh, I thought I was eating a lot, I'm meeting all my calories. Why, you know, are some of the bars in your nutrient analysis showing that I'm only at like 50%? Well, maybe it's because, you know, even if you are, let's say, eating a vegetarian or even a vegan nutrition plan, if you buy, you know, protein fortified waffles or even protein fortified almond milk, you might not be getting the, you know, amino acid profile that we really want you to. So we've got to reach in and start to, you know, manipulate that just a little bit so that we do have you getting that profile.
Okay. So Elizabeth, I know that you are incredibly mindful of what you consume at each meal. When you're grocery shopping or you're planning your meals for the week, you know, how do you set yourself up with nutritious food and not empty calories?
Yeah. Great question here. I think there's a couple different parts to this. So I mean, in terms of grocery shopping, I'm sure our listeners have, you know, heard the recommendation before to shop mostly the exterior aisles of the grocery store. And that's a really great starting place. Just as Dr. Austin was, you know, saying earlier, that the more natural the foods are, then you're really going to be able to have foods that have great nutrients, that you're going to stay away from those that are processed and might be taking a lot of that nutritional value out of a food that went into that product. So yeah, I'll basically grab my cart and shop the exterior of the store, and I'm picking up, you know, fresh produce like meat, stop by the dairy products. You know, I'll occasionally stroll to the middle of the store for some bread, some nut butter. You know, I'm not excluding the middle of the store completely, but I would say the majority of all of my grocery shopping comes from those fresh items. And then in terms of planning what my grocery list is going to be and planning my meals, I have found some weekly menus that work really well for me. And I typically just recycle those. So I have a lot of variety within that week, but then I might have 4 weeks that I you know, go through every single month. And so January week one is also February week one, which is also March week one. And then that makes it really easy for me because the grocery list for those weeks has already been made. They're foods that I like. They're ones that work really well for me. And then I still get some good variety and a lot of different nutrients with the variety that I have in that week per se. Now the menus that I have and I make do vary throughout the year. I mean, I'll say, you know, I do like to be mindful of what I'm eating, but I'm not as dialed in, you know, November, December with holidays and travel. I definitely allow that flexibility in the off season. Now race season, everything is much more dialed in and I stick to meals that are all planned out and I will take the time to sit down and plan what the macros are going to be and how many calories I'm planning to consume based on the workouts that I'm doing. So, I mean, for example, yesterday I had a recovery day and my total carbohydrate intake was like 40% of my calories. But tomorrow I have a long brick workout. And so my planned workout nutrition and the meals that I'm going to be taking in, that's going to be like 70% carbohydrates. And so when I'm planning my meals, I'm planning, you know, not only what foods, but like what type of fuel I need for the training day based on where I am in the season and kind of my goals for that time too. So there's a lot that goes into it, but once you kind of find what works well for you, then I think there's a lot that can be recycled from that.
Now, Dr. Austin, there are some things that seem obvious. Like it seems obvious that broccoli is nutritious and a Twinkie is not. But it's not always that clear on the surface when we're grocery shopping or we're planning our meals or we're looking for that variety. So what strategies do you have for distinguishing the nutritional value of a individual food item?
So the approach I try to use or get people to use is, you know, what is the origin of where that food came from and how many steps did it have to take to get into that state? Okay. And this is where if you went around the grocery store like Elizabeth does and sticks to the outside, what you'll find is, you know, if you start in the produce section, you're going to get the foods that come in usually its most natural origin, right? Because there you're going to have your raw fruits and vegetables. You're not going to have them put into a can all of a sudden, right? Because there you're going to get the most nutrition. Whereas some people say, well, aren't canned vegetables suitable or frozen vegetables? And the answer is, well, yeah, it's better than nothing. But at the same time, you're still losing some of the nutrients in the processing, you know, lineup that, you know, as you go from a raw vegetable into a canned or a frozen vegetable, things are happening to that food item that takes away. It's kind of like blanching vegetables. They say, well, doesn't that take a lot of the nutrients out? Yeah, it does. So if we really want to get everything from our broccoli and our cauliflower, right, we sit there with hummus and just eat it raw. So that's where sometimes people have to sit back, and really appreciate that the raw foods we have is, you know, always in our best interest. It's kind of like then if you keep going through the store and you go into the meat section and you see, you know, the fresh laid meats, right? They've had nothing done to them. Well, that same chicken you can go find in a package in the grocery store aisle, right? Or you can find it frozen. And it's going to have things done to it that will take away some of the quality. It's not that it's horrible, but you want to try as much as possible to get to the actual, you know, origin. And so that's where buying in bulk.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, you know, just buying in bulk sometimes, right? You know, things like lentils and quinoa and couscous, and you're buying potatoes, and it's just, look, I got to cook at home, maybe with some olive oil and, you know, salt and pepper, right? Or a little bit of seasoning. You're going to get your best, most nutrient-rich foods at that point in time. So that's what I try to encourage people to do. It's kind of like if you take a look at even dairy products, you know, there's a big difference between buying dairy products at the grocery store and then going to an actual farm and buying them, okay? So you have to always go back to how close can you get? And it's just some people will say, look, I can never get that close. It's too expensive, Krista. You know, I have to go down different roads. So we always understand that. But if we want to get as many nutrients as possible, we want to go in the most raw form and cook it ourselves. So it's kind of like, you know, going from cauliflower to frozen cauliflower rice, right? You know, you can kind of assume that the cauliflower just in and of itself is going to be more nutritious.
Anecdotally, it feels like the healthier foods, you know, the fresh fruit, the produce, the fresh meats and grains, you know, the things, Elizabeth, you're talking about that you're buying on the outside of the grocery aisles. It feels like all of those things have a shorter pantry life than my box of Cheez-Its or my, that I like to keep in the pantry. So my wife and I, you know, we grocery shop early Sunday morning, and it just kind of helps us ensure that the fresh, healthy stuff stays stocked for that week. Like kind of before we found that rhythm, we had a hard time like keeping those fresh ingredients in the fridge. And to this day, if we get busy and all of a sudden, that Sunday morning grocery run just doesn't happen on a particularly busy weekend, it gets really hard to keep that stuff in the fridge because it seems like it can go bad so quickly if you don't eat it in the first couple of days you have it. So what tips do both of you have? And Elizabeth, we'll start with you and then go to Dr. Austin. What tips do you have for keeping those nutritious foods stocked in the house?
This is certainly something that, I mean, yes, fresh is always better. But as Dr. Austin was saying, you know, frozen or canned fruits, vegetables, chicken, it's probably better than an alternative that you would choose. And so I have plenty of canned vegetables, frozen chicken, kind of some of those staples in a non-perishable format. And so like if I have pineapple on my menu that I'm going to have for breakfast before I go swim and the fresh pineapple has gone bad in the fridge, obviously I'm not going to have moldy pineapple, so I'll grab the canned pineapple from the pantry. So, I mean, little accommodations like that can work to make sure that you have that like plan B. And so it's not all of a sudden, I don't have any pineapple, so I'm going to stop for a donut on my way to the pool instead. You have a still good alternative. And sure, it may not be as nutritious as the fresh pineapple that you were planning, but you know, it's better than picking up a donut on the way to the pool too.
Yep. I've done that. I do that myself with vegetables. I'm a big fan of just steamed broccoli and cauliflower. And so I keep those kind of bird's eye, like microwavable steamable.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Throw the microwave for 4.5 seconds. It's just frozen broccoli and cauliflower. I sprinkle some salt and pepper on there and boom.
Good to go.
Have that with a peanut butter sandwich for lunch and nice serving of vegetables. I can eat the whole bag by myself. My wife thinks it smells like farts, but that's okay. it's food. It's veggies. But I haven't considered doing that with fruits and maybe some other types of healthy foods. Dr. Austin, what are some strategies that you give athletes for kind of keeping those healthy options stocked in our house?
Yeah, I think what I try to do is think about the healthy options that can stay stocked and not necessarily go bad within the week. And typically it's within the week kind of strategy. And then I'll also do things like if I am a big fan of the pineapple and I get that going, I won't cut the pineapple up, let's say, until I finish my mangoes and kiwis, right? Mm. So kind of sometimes just strategizing as to when you actually cut into that fresh pineapple. I know it's tempting to buy the pre-cut pineapple at the store, but if you can actually buy the fruit and purchase it without it being cut up, you can usually have something last a bit longer. So like I'll do a cantaloupe and a pineapple, couple mangoes and some kiwis, but then I'll stock up on things like apples, oranges, and bananas that are a lot easier for us to control. And look at things like nuts and hummus and avocados. Again, it's kind of difficult for those things to go bad. Yeah. Buying things in bulk like lentils, couscous, you know, potatoes, quinoa, you can do that. And even, you know, with your meats, typically if it's just 1 week at a time, you can get enough and kind of, you know, put 3 days down in the fridge, freeze it for a little bit and then pull it back out. So you might have to compromise there. But overall it's doable if you can time it in the right way, or if it's just, hey, I got to run in and buy some fresh meats or some fresh salmon. It's a lot easier to zip in and out of the store if it's just like a, you know, one-off item. So those are little ways to just kind of control it. Because really, if you take items like bell peppers and asparagus and even broccoli and cauliflower, they really aren't going to go bad within the week if you don't cut into them. And if you buy them kind of a little bit more firm and just not quite so ready to rock. I would just say that typically, you know, they get to a point where they're so ripe that then you've got to use them, right? So typically we can time it well enough that if you buy them just in the right state and the asparagus isn't already starting to wilt a little bit at the tips, right, then you can get it to last. So you can put that vegetable at the back end of the week. So sometimes it's just strategy in terms of when you buy it, how long does it really have in your week, and use the ones that you got to use at the front of the week, because it just, you know, what was available at the store said, okay, I've got to make this one the priority at the start of the week, and then put the ones that, you know, are kind of, you know, getting prepared to be ready to eat with a little bit more room temperature or what have you, leave those for the back end of the week.
That makes, yeah, exact sense. Like in the James household, we buy two bunches of bananas every week because we go through bananas, I mean, like nothing else. And one of them we buy a yellow bunch of bananas and we buy a green bunch of bananas so that we've got those for the later half of the week before we go shopping again. So, yep, I totally was making sense with what you said.
So, Elizabeth, what I'm hearing you say is that the James household is bananas.
That is accurate as well. Yes.
terrible joke. So I got to keep it real. I got to be honest and come clean. And I'm sure some of our athletes in the audience will relate to me here. But I know that when 4 p.m. rolls around, my lunch is wearing off and I'm reaching for that 4 p.m. snack. You know, there's options in my pantry. There's that bag of pretzels that I enjoy. Those are those Cheez-Its, those crunchy, salty snacks, you know, and those probably aren't as nutritious as the Greek yogurt and granola I could have instead. You know, so most days I'll grab the nutritious snack, and maybe it's a good cheese and some nuts, or maybe it's a Greek yogurt and some granola. But there will absolutely be those days where I opt for the bag of pretzels or the chips or the indulgent snack that I just want to have that particular day. You know, there will absolutely be those days where I do that. So Dr. Austin, when it comes to indulging on emptier calories, how much is permissible and how much is too much or too often?
Yeah, so too much really is a flexible term, I guess you could say. So too much for me, the way I define it for my clients, is when our need for meeting our key micros and macros over the actual calories we need for the day is overridden by kind of the not so healthy items, right?
Okay.
So I always say then you had too much of the emptier calories. So you can only envision that that's going to vary for especially a long course triathlete. Because they're going to have lower caloric intake some day and much higher caloric intakes on other days. So typically what I say is if you're going to consume the empty calories, we can take a variety of approaches. But for most triathletes, the most common one is when they have their greatest training load or volume on a certain day. That's when you're going to see the emptier calories. They get to have a little bit more fun with those. However, I have other clients that are like, look, I do a lot better if I just have a little bit of empty calories each day and control sure. it. So there's a couple different ways, probably even more than that, to control how you consume those. But, you know, some people just need, 100 to 200 calories, what we like to call empty calories every day. And it helps them, you know, with their nutrition overall because they just satisfy a sweet tooth or something that they feel like they need. And so we try to be flexible with it. But if we're going too far, you know, over with the empty calories when we need certain micros and macros, that's when we kind of got to start to question it.
I got you. That totally makes sense. What I've always done, and just anecdotally has worked for me and my wife and our household, is kind of the motto is if you don't buy it, you can't eat it. And if, you know, if it's very, very, like when we go visit my family in Florida, you know, my sister has kids, there's grandkids in the house for my parents. And so there's always all sorts of different snacks. And if it's there, chances are I'm going to talk myself into reaching for that chocolate chip cookie or those chips but in our own personal house, if we don't buy that kind of stuff, then we can't eat it. And so when we make that Sunday grocery store run, we might let ourselves get one treat, you know, for that week. We might get some salt, lightly salted pita chips or a bag of pretzels or a box of Cheez-Its. And I'm not going to buy three or four things like that. I'm only going to buy one thing like that. And so I can't reach for different things multiple times per day. You know, it's just a handful of Cheez-Its here or a handful of pretzels there. And I don't have a plethora of options like that in the house at any given time. Now, that's easy for us. We don't have kids. If you have kids and you have just snaggy stuff in the house for them, maybe that gets harder. But that's something that's what worked for me and my wife in our household.
And you just made all the listeners happy by, you know, bringing Cheez-Its up again. They're like, ah, there it is. Andrew and his Cheez-Its.
Yeah, got you. On a normal training day, I kind of have a rhythm, right? For how big my meals are, how I time them, and nutritionally what I'm putting in them. Elizabeth, where I'm most likely to go off script and have those Cheez-Its, you know, they're the heavier training days where I'm burning more calories, I'm hungry, and I feel like I've earned the right to splurge and have maybe some emptier calories. So Elizabeth, you have more big training days on your calendar than I do on mine. So how do you handle kind of keeping it nutritious no matter what the workload of the day brings?
Well, a couple things here as well. And I think, you know, what Dr. Austin said kind of needs to be reiterated, that on some of those bigger training days, you might have a little more flexibility and you may be able to incorporate, you know, a snack there that isn't going to provide as many nutrients. But really, for me, it comes down to planning ahead and knowing kind of what my needs are for the day in terms of how many calories I really need to replace from the workouts, what I'm looking for in terms of my meals to not only make sure that I'm recovering from that day, but also setting myself up for success for the next training day as well. So, I mean, we just... At the beginning of this episode, I was talking about, just got done with a brick workout, had a good lunch, you know, making sure that that was a calorie dense meal, because I had just gotten done with a swim bike run session. And so I had burned quite a few calories, really needing to make sure that I fueled my body up well, because tomorrow is a really big training day for me too. I think one of the big things here for me is really thinking of food is the fuel. And a lot of times there's a big emotional attachment to it that, you know, we do feel like, oh, we've earned it and it's a social thing. And, you know, maybe after that big workout, we're, you know, going to go out for burgers with friends. And not to say that that's bad, but I think that a lot of triathletes go overboard with their post-workout meals thinking that they've earned that. And you know, they're like, oh, well, I've got to replace all these calories because I was just on the bike for 4 hours. And, you know, so they order the burger and the large fries and the milkshake. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I love burger, fries, milkshake. That I've talked about it before. That is my post-race go-to like celebratory meal. Give me a big burger and a chocolate milkshake. I'm all for it. But I mean, that post-workout fueling can be exaggerated and overdone. And when your body is done with a tough workout like that, it's craving key nutrients. And so it's important to refuel, but it's important to make sure that there is quality in that as well, especially if you're training again later in the day or the next day. I mean, I'm likely to splurge on that burger and milkshake after a race because I'm not going to have a quality session for the next few days. I'm not worried about training later in the evening. I'm not worried about, you know, a key session the next morning. But, you know, if I'm getting done with a big brick workout and I've got a long run the next day, I'm going to pay a whole lot more attention to the quality of the food and how I'm replacing the calories that I've burned in that session. One of the things that I encourage my athletes to do is to really keep a log of how they're fueling during the workout and then, you know, how they're feeling later in the day, how they feel on the session the next day as well. And if you're absolutely starving after your workout, maybe we need to look at putting some more calories into the workout fueling. If you are, you know, feeling hungry and you had a meal and not feeling yucky full the next day still, then maybe we're closer to being on point. And so I really encourage them to make notes of not only how the session went, but how they fueled, what they did for fueling after, how they felt later, how they felt on their session the next day. And that can give you a lot of information right there.
And I imagine hearing that just makes Dr. Austin's heart happy because she knows the value in that as well. I'm going to take this opportunity, Elizabeth. I've never given my burger rant on the podcast before. So I'm going to splurge 60 seconds here and take 60 seconds to rant about my opinion on going out for burgers, because I mean, I love burgers, but you know, the burger run is kind of a staple in the American experience and diet. And, you know, my wife is a Texan, so she loves Whataburger. And so every now and then on Thursday night, if we don't feel like cooking, it's what if we go to Whataburger? And I personally, I'm a Five Guys guy myself. Five Guys is kind of my kind of fast food burger of choice personally. But my problem with like burger night, you know, when you choose to make that call and go get just a you know, I mean, burger is protein. I mean, there's some nutrients in there. The burger isn't inherently the worst thing for you. You know, it's served on, you know, a bun, which gives you some carbs. But what kills me at burger joints is all of this, your side options are either just fries exclusively, or they'll have like, you know, like fried onion rings and like fried like sides. And so like you can't pair even a healthy like vegetable or a healthy side with your burger experience. So like literally like what my wife's heard me rant about this like so many times, like I will microwave a bag of vegetables like we talked about, or I will like have a serving of carrots from the fridge before we make that Whataburger run to get that burger that we're craving. And that way I feel like I've had a nice healthy vegetable side. But what gets me on the burger run isn't that the burger is the problem. It's often just the fact that the sides you're pairing with it nutritionally aren't really doing anything for you. That's my rant. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but my wife's rolled her eyes as I've delivered that rant many, many times to friends and family. That's all I have to say there. Do you guys have a favorite burger of choice if you're going to go out for a burger run? Is it In-N-Out for you, Dr. Austin?
No, I'm not an In-N-Out person. Like In-N-Out, Whataburger.
Okay.
I'm not really, you know, I'd rather grill a burger at home. So I'm kind of picky, I guess, on an item like that. But I'm not picky like on, well, I guess I am picky. Like, let's say, you know, if we're going to go out, I might go get pizza, but I want New York style pizza and I don't want any other style because New York style pizza just always tastes the best. So I guess I'm a little pickier than most, but, you know, definitely understand the love of a burger. It's just, I got to have mine taste a certain way.
So let's get, I've gotten through all of my, nutrition questions. I hope, you know, we've all learned a lot here. You know, we have more knowledge than we did at the start of the episode, just on what to look for in our food. So, let's move on to more of the tasty part and not the burger tasty part, the healthy tasty part. So, we're going to slide into Krista and Elizabeth's favorite nutrient rich food. So we'll kind of oscillate back and forth between the two of you and kind of hear a dozen just recommendations here for nutrient-rich foods we can work into our diet. So Dr. Austin, what is the first nutrient-rich food that you want to recommend?
So I guess I don't really have a priority. What I tend to do is work with people, right? So that's kind of my job. And I go through and present them with items that are, you know, not a no-go on their list. And I always tell people, what are foods that you just absolutely will not eat? Right? And they give me that list. And most of the times I'm just trying to get people to start to gravitate to nutrient-rich foods that they actually have an interest in. So a lot of times it's little things like grabbing some walnuts and pecans or getting them to eat vegetables that they like the most. So like for me, a good example is I like asparagus much more than spinach or broccoli, even though we know the micronutrients of spinach and broccoli are slightly better than asparagus. So I think it's always about trying to find what people will gravitate to for me. So that's how I tend to go about it.
Okay. Yeah. And it's a great way for us to all think about it. You know, don't make yourself go out of your way to force something into your diet that you're just not going to actually put on your plate and eat. You know, make sure it's things that you do like and try some things and branch out and see what you like. Elizabeth, for you, what is item number one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, now following up with Dr. Austin's answer, that was a great way to start. Like, hey, let's think about, you know, what people will actually eat. And here I am, I'm going to say avocados. And I know that even though I'll give that recommendation, I'm just not going to convince Andrew that he needs to go buy these on his next grocery store run.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, there's a reason that I said I wanted to grow avocados. Like, these are a great food and something that I incorporate frequently. I mean, they're, you know, rich in that heart healthy fat, you know, they contain a little protein, potassium, magnesium, vitamin B, E, K. I mean, these are the good fats that help your body absorb all of those vitamins. I love avocado toast. I love putting avocado on eggs. I'll put avocado in salad. I'll even, you know, blend it up a little bit sometimes in smoothies. And so, like I said, this is something that's frequently on my grocery list. Wish I could grow it and save the money. But that would be my top number one recommendation in terms of a good one to incorporate.
All right. On to each of your item number two, Dr. Austin, what are you going to tell us here?
Typically, I try to get people to eat fish when I'm working with them. I can't tell you how many times I, you know, work with someone and they just don't go anywhere near fish. And if they go near fish, then they're like, oh, I'll have salmon. And I'm like, okay, salmon. And what else can we try that's fish? So there's a lot of other healthy fish, especially fish like cod that's high in protein and it's, you know, really low and, you know, like saturated fat and what have you. It's not overly calorically dense. So trying to do things like that to increase the quality of protein they have in their diet, I try to go after things like that. That to me is the approach.
That speaks to me. I like fish quite a bit. And my wife and I, on a weekly basis, I mean, we almost have a salmon night every single week. I throw it on the Traeger and put some seasoning on it and they come out nice and smoked. But it's usually salmon. And so to your point, it'd probably be good for us to vary that a little bit. And what you mentioned cod. Are there any other fish that are kind of your top recommendations for us to branch out to if we're trying to get away from just salmon every single time?
You know, ones like trout or tuna steak. Most people are not big fans of fatty fish like a sardine or mackerel even. So I try to promote the cod and the trout. But, you know, typically the lighter, the flakier, the more likely people are to eat it. There's nothing wrong with like, you know, halibut or mahi, but they're just not as rich in something as like omega-3 fatty acids. So I try to go down the cod road as the second one to have them try, and then trout and then tuna steak. Just because of how lean the cod and the tuna steak are, it really kind of just helps the protein content. So.
Okay. Very good. Very helpful. Great tips there. Elizabeth, what is number two for you?
So for number two, I kind of put beans and lentils together. And there's kind of a personal reason for this too. I actually have very, very high cholesterol, and this is a mostly genetic thing. But I mean, beans and lentils are great for me to incorporate as I'm always looking to kind of naturally keep my cholesterol a little bit lower. They're great for the protein intake without that additional fat content. I mean, also high in fiber, rich in zinc, great for keeping your immune system healthy, which I mean, gosh, as athletes, we want to stay healthy. We don't want to get sick. We don't want to miss our training. And so that's kind of a key thing for me and, a recommendation I would make.
I love lentil soup like so much. Like I'm a big fan of lentils in soup, and actually, Corner Bakery, which is a soup and sandwich place we have here in Texas. I don't know if it's a nationwide chain or not, or if other states have it, but we have them all over the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. They had just the best lentil soup. And I went in one time, this is years ago now. I went in and I went to order my lentil soup and salad, and they were like, oh, we don't have that soup anymore. They pulled my lentil soup off the menu, and I'm a grudge holder, so I have never gone back to Corner Bakery since they burned me on removing my lentil soup from the menu. Anyway, I'm just full of rants today when it comes to food. But yes, love lentils. Great recommendation there, Elizabeth. Dr. Austin, let's move on to number three. Working our way down the list, we're all getting some great food ideas here. What do you have for us next?
Next, I recommend ones... like, you know, fruits like mangoes and kiwis, and really they're filled with vitamin C, much like a lot of the ones we tend to gravitate towards. But they also have things like, oh, vitamin K and vitamin A, and they've got the fiber content that we want. And so sometimes it's just about getting people to create variety and enjoy the differences in taste that these fruits can bring. So I like to try and expand people's horizons, shall we say, at times. So mangoes and kiwis are some of my favorites, and they create more color. So
yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, they sell in our grocery store. They have almost like you buy like the halos where they're really little and peelable. They have kiwis that are the same way, and I love them. They're a fantastic kind of change of pace. We don't buy them every time. We buy them sometimes just as a nice change up. So I'm fully on board with that recommendation. Elizabeth, what is your recommendation number three?
Well, kind of sticking with the fruits here, but I'm going to go back a little more mainstream to our berries. So, I mean, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, I mean, strawberries, all of that, nutritious and just absolutely what I would consider delicious. I've talked before about how much of a sweet tooth I have. And for me, berries are kind of one of those foods that help me in that craving. And so if I've got a sweet tooth, I can kind of, you know, maybe curb it a little bit with some strawberries or some blueberries and some Greek yogurt. I mean, as Dr. Austin said, you know, they're great in terms of the vitamin C content, fiber. You know, they get kind of those superpowers from those pigments that they have. So as we talked about, you know, coloring your plate, you've got a good way to add some color here. I mean, I incorporate them in a number of things. So smoothies, salads, yogurt parfaits, I'll add them into oatmeal. Just a great way to kind of to get some of those extra nutrients from the fruits.
Absolutely. Moving on to, this is number 7 of our dozen. It's number 4 for Dr. Austin. What do you have for us?
It's oatmeal. So oatmeal is kind of a unique food in that it can provide a great amino acid profile to help complement what we already bring from kind of some of the more animal-based products. But it also has a lot of antioxidants and just some polyphenols. It's got the fiber in there. So it just has a lot of things that can help us do, from helping us to feel full, to helping us, you know, maybe control our cholesterol a little bit better. And it's just filled with so much that can help us throughout the day. I really encourage people to have oatmeal as part of their breakfast. So putting oatmeal in there with so many other things can just really boost, you know, the start of our day. So oatmeal is one of the best ones out there, in my opinion.
My favorite oatmeal, I've got to plug it. I think I mentioned on the podcast a long time ago, but there's a brand called Picky Bars that was actually founded by pro triathlete, now retired pro triathlete, Jesse Thomas. And they have two in particular I love. There's one that's called Trail Mix Fix. And so it's made to kind of taste like an oatmeal version of Trail Mix. And they have one called Ready to Rumble Apple Crumble. And it's kind of an apple cinnamon mix. And both of those are oh so tasty. They're my personal favorite ones. And yeah, I work those in on a regular basis into the diet. Love a good serving of oatmeal in the morning. Elizabeth, what is number 4 for you?
All right. Well, my 4th pick is, we're just going to kind of say, is greens. And I mean, the TriDot staff knows yep. how much I love my dark green leafy salads. Yep. That's a go-to. And so, you know, those dark greens like kale and Swiss chard and arugula, I mean, they just pack your plate full of antioxidants. And what's great there is, I mean, you've got a really, I mean, great base to create a whole bunch of salads and, you know, incorporate them into a bunch of different foods. And so once you've got that plate of dark leafy greens, then you can also get creative with what other nutrients you're adding to it. You can have your variety of proteins or fruits and nuts. And I mean, I think that's why I love my salads so much, is because there's so much variety. You can do so much. You can be creative with them. And it's great for you. So yep, that would be my 4th recommendation there.
And Elizabeth and I, we have the same palate on greens, and we know it. So when the TriDot staff does go out to lunch or dinner or something, she and I will often kind of look at each other across the table and be like, what are you getting?
Yep.
Because we just kind of learn. We often end up ordering the same salad. Uh-huh. My wife and I, this is something that we've started doing lately. You know, my wife is working from home. I work from home. And so we keep spinach and arugula in the fridge, and that's our favorite combination of greens. And so not every day, but most days with lunch, whatever our protein is, whatever we're pairing with it, you know, we will chop up some spinach and arugula and put it in a bowl, and just every single day slightly changing up what toppings are in there. So one day it might be some pear and Parmesan cheese with some candied walnuts, and the next day it might be a diced Honeycrisp apple and some goat cheese and, you know, chopped fig and some chicken. And so that's something that we do frequently together for lunch. So I track right there with you, Elizabeth. Love that.
See, I was doing good and, you know, not feeling hungry on this episode till you were describing all of these salads that Morgan is making.
Our salads.
Like I was doing good. I was like, man, we've been talking about food the whole time, feeling satisfied. I'm set. And you started talking about these different salad varieties and man,
That's what got me
right there.
And I'm the weirdo that I don't even need to, like, when there's toppings like that on the salad, I don't even need a dressing for flavor. Like, I mean, and sometimes I'll throw like a very light, you know, vinaigrette. I like a champagne vinaigrette. Sometimes I'll put some, but sometimes I'll just eat it dry and let the apple mm-hmm. and the the walnuts and that bring the flavor. And Morgan's like, you're weird. And I'm like, it works. Getting past salads, hope this is giving you guys some great ideas of things to target on your next grocery store run. Let's move on to grocery store item recommendation number 5. Dr. Austin, what do you have here?
So one of the new ones that I've been making to people, just trying to help, you know, make their overall staple of their meal healthier, is the new pastas and rices that are coming out, and they're made from chickpeas and lentils, and they bring a lot more, you know, protein and fiber into the diet. They taste a lot different, to be honest.
They do.
So you can tell they're made from something that's much more from, you know, the ground versus the processed. But it's something that really can help lower the glycemic load of people's diets and give them something that's a little bit healthier than the traditional pastas and rices. And so I've been going down that road, and I think it really tends to help when people say, hey, I want to have a pasta dinner after my workout. And I'm like, okay, well, let's make it the healthiest pasta possible. And we have lentil pasta or chickpea pasta, same with the rice. And so that's a new recommendation from me. I'm going down that road a good bit with people, and they seem to like it. So,
well, I like hearing that. I just bought some chickpea pasta this last week. We haven't tried it yet. And so, okay, it's got your endorsement. So now I'm feeling even better about that purchase.
Yeah. They're making rice now that's like totally out of veggies too. So I think it's the Green Giant that now makes rice that I bought the other day, and it all comes from vegetables.
I'll have to look for that.
So there's a lot of healthier options that are coming out, but you definitely taste the difference, shall we say. But if you want to go as healthy as possible on your meal, it's one way to give yourself a, you know, kind of what you would typically associate with like a steak and rice or something. But now you've created a healthier version of a steak and rice dinner. So, yeah.
No, very good. Thanks for clarifying that, even just for me. I've always kind of wondered that. Elizabeth, what is your food item number 5? Getting toward the end here. What do you got?
Yeah. So another thing that I will eat for any meal of the day is a sweet potato. I mean, this is a food that I'll eat, you know, in an egg hash, do like a sweet potato bowl.
Yes, please. And thank you.
Yeah. For lunch, have a baked sweet potato for dinner. I mean,
keep them
Charles
coming.
Makes some awesome sweet potato fries. I think you'd like that as one of your burger sides, Andrew. So might have to incorporate that. But yeah, I mean, sweet potatoes, they're loaded with fiber. I mean, great with vitamin C, B6. They're great energy boost. They've got some natural sugars that are kind of slowly released into the bloodstream. So they have more of like a balanced source of energy without that same like blood sugar spike. So I incorporate these a lot throughout the week, especially in periods of heavier training.
Yep. No, you don't have to talk me into eating sweet potatoes. That's for sure. Yes, please. And thank you all day, every day. So last couple here, this is number 11 and 12 in our dozen recommendations, tons of tasty foods we've already talked about. One more recommendation from each of you. Dr. Austin, what's your last one?
It's an apple. And so, you know, the old saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. So one of the things people are always kind of surprised that I say this, but there's packed in an apple and there's a lot of soluble fiber. It brings in, you know, items like quercetin. So it's just one of those foods that does a lot for you. And so people always say, you know what, Krista, my digestive system is better since I started having apples again. So I recommend people actually don't look at an apple like, oh, that's kind of not as fancy of a fruit or what have you. Maybe I should do something a little bit better. Actually, apples are really good for us. And so helps the digestive tract a good bit. And so I recommend people actually put the apples back into their diet, just in switch it up and have different ones, enjoy the different flavors of apples.
Elizabeth, close down our main set today. What is our 12th grocery store nutrient-rich recommendation for today?
You know, I thought about this one for a while and trying to figure out how to close us out. And rethought this a number of times, actually, after Dr. Austin said, you know, you try other things beyond the salmon. But I'm still going to say salmon as my last one. And I think that, you know, there's probably just some personal bias there that I like it a lot.
And to be clear, to be clear, Dr. Austin wasn't saying, oh, salmon are not good
right,
for you.
Exactly.
She was just saying she recommends
branch,
in addition to the salmon,
out,
mix it up with
yes,
some others.
Branch out beyond it. But I love it. You know, protein rich, great source of that omega-3, that fatty acid, just so important for proper brain function, healthy cardiovascular system. This is something that I have, I mean, frequently, but also in a variety of ways. Something that I just have done probably over the last 4 or 5 months is also doing some like smoked salmon. And, you know, that can be a little extra salty, but sometimes that's okay. And I need a little bit of that extra salt with the training, especially as
sure.
the temperatures are warming up here and my sweat rate is out of control. But yeah, I mean, just incorporating that in a variety of meals, some smoked salmon on a bagel, having it on a salad or as a main course for dinner. That's something, again, that I find myself eating for basically any meal of the day. And it's just a great staple in our household.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
The TriDot software engineers are always up to something behind the scenes as they strive to take a great triathlon training app and make it better and better. At the time of this episode being published, a brand new addition to the app has been released, and so I've got TriDot product owner BJ Leeper and software engineer Corey Gackenheimer with us to tell us a little bit about XP and leveling up within TriDot. So BJ, Corey, thanks for cooling us down with a little TriDot app talk today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're excited to talk about some of these new features we're rolling out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Andrew. Looking forward to this and hoping I can execute this cool down well.
So BJ, TriDot XP or execution points, you know, most commonly in the video game world or the app world, XP stands for experience points. At TriDot, they will be execution points. Now, these were added to the app to provide more motivation, more fun, and more performance gains. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, just like you said, we're kind of playing off the gaming world. And, you know, what you see in the gaming world with XP is experience points. And we like to think of it as execution points, as you said, because the little internal team slogan we have is that fast is fun and faster is funner, if that's
yeah,
actually a
sure.
word. But But yeah, with XP and part of the app, you know, there's other training platforms that kind of make a game of things. And we know that our training is in the real world where outside you're running, even cycling, and having a way that our athletes could actually gain XP points through that process of real life training. And that's what we kind of wanted to bring to life. So XP is just kind of a fun way to put a wrapper around the other slogan we have that we talk all the time about is
yeah.
doing the right training right.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I love about the best, BJ, because in most apps and in most worlds, on Zwift, for example, the more I ride on Zwift, the more XP points I accumulate. And we know that doing the right training right isn't always about doing more. And so it's not, you don't get more XP points on TriDot for just doing more training. You get XP points for doing the right training and doing your session correctly. And it's really... really an interesting thing to help guide us in doing those sessions right and validating that we are doing it right. So, Corey, quite a bit of testing went into perfecting the execution points. The way they were weighted, the way they were earned, how many you need to level up from time to time. I know as a software developer and as a TriDot athlete, you frequently use yourself as a guinea pig, you know, for some of these new features as you're kind of figuring them out. What was the process like ironing out all the details for XP?
Yeah, lots of planning and testing definitely went into this. XP, like BJ alluded to, is pretty straightforward. We just need to make it not only reflect how important a session is, but also make it fair for all the athletes. All the different types of training loads, and whether you're a high-volume athlete or a lower volume, maybe a bike run only, XP needs to perform and highlight your sessions and their difficulty at the same level for all. So yeah, as a guinea pig, and myself and another one of our senior engineers, Chris, we're both TriDot athletes. We're able to get many iterations of XP kind of out and tested internally, flesh out the algorithms as alpha and beta testers. And then we were able to even include others on the team, yourself included, Andrew. And get those beta tests out. That really helped us figure out exactly what we needed and get it released. And I think it turned out to be really clean and not overly complex.
Yeah, as you guys were doing the testing, it was interesting because for a couple of weeks there, every time I would log on to the app, I was a different level because you guys were obviously kind of perfecting and smoothing out, you know, what level you are at certain rates. And now, Corey, the way it works is every week, the maximum XP points you can earn is 300. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things that maybe you saw as your levels were changing as we were developing it was we're running this data historically as well. So it goes back in time to the beginning of Tri-Dot time. And it starts to accumulate that and applies that same algorithm to your historical training sessions. And so it's providing you with a level that suits you based off of even your previous training.
Yeah. So all my athletes that have been on Tri-Dot for years, don't think you're starting from ground zero. I'm looking at mine right now. I have 22,117 XP points at the time of this recording. I'm a level 38 athlete. I'm almost level 39, guys. I am just a few hundred, I'm about 1,000 XP points away from level 39. So I think I can hit that in the next few weeks. So for you two guys, Corey and BJ, what level are y'all currently starting at now that XP is rolled out?
Well, I can't quite top that, but I am embarking on level 28. So
okay,
and with my last 5 years of training, I've got four kids all under the age of 13, and I feel like I should be getting double XP every time I am able to get a workout in. But you know, that's not how it always works. But yeah, no, sure. It's definitely it definitely fits where my training's probably been as spotty at best sometimes over the last couple of years. But yeah, it's fun to look at those numbers and actually see where you're at and what you can strive for.
Corey, what are you at already?
Yeah, so I actually leveled up pre-release last week on an FTP test. I went from 32 to 33. So that was where I'm at now is 33, and I've got a ways to go to get to the next level.
So once this was released and athletes started buzzing about it on the I Am Tri-Dot Facebook group, I think the most common question I saw had to do with the perks we earn by leveling up. And that's the question, right? Everybody's hearing, Corey, you leveled up during that FTP test. And it's like, cool. So you leveled up. What happens? So on Zwift, for example, you level up and you can unlock new jerseys or new helmets, maybe new bikes for your avatar. With Tri-Dot, as we level up and unlock more perks, what are those perks going to be?
Well, just like many athletes are familiar with, like you mentioned, the Zwift training platform is kind of that virtual platform a lot of people are used to that do a lot of cycling. And just like that virtual gear, we kind of want to bring that to real life as well with our real training, creating XP in the real world. So definitely some future things to look forward to with the perks are going to be centered around some gear upgrades. Different features that the user will be able to unlock and some cool things moving forward. We can't quite tip our cap to show everything yet, but some really exciting things to look forward to.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Now, I know that XP and leveling up are just the start of kind of the new motivational and social features that Tri-Dot will be releasing. BJ, is there anything else you can tease that we should be on the lookout for now that XP and leveling up has been released?
Well, yeah, as we all know, triathletes are probably some of the most competitive athletes on the planet.
Sure.
So we want to kind of harness that fun energy with the gamification, and we are looking forward to creating some XP leaderboards. So that's something that you can look forward to where you can kind of compare where you're at with your friends and other competitors. And then, you know, there's some special bonuses that I'm not going to say exactly what those are, but XP bonuses for the future that I know some Tri-Dot athletes that have been around for a while have been talking about for quite some time, and then we'll have some new bonuses that Tri-Dot athletes will be talking about for years to come.
BJ, are there going to be any unicorn sightings in the Tri-Dot app? Is that what we're getting at here?
I'll just say I cannot confirm nor deny that. So you'll have to be surprised.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Dr. Krista Austin and pro triathlete Elizabeth James for helping us get nutrient-dense foods into our diets. And shout out to Delta G for partnering with us on the episode today. Remember, you can go to deltagketones.com and book a free 15-minute consultation to learn how you can use ketone drinks to supercharge your training and racing. Remember to use code TRIDOT20 at checkout for 20% off your first order. Enjoying the show? Have any triathlon questions or topics that you want to hear us talk about? Head to TRIDOT.com to let us know what you're thinking. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.